Paula Mee, author, joins me on the program now. Hi, Paula.
Hi, Greg. Good morning.
How are you getting on? Are you well?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, it's a beautiful day here in Dublin.
Same here, actually, but well, it's not quite. It's going to get that way. But anyway, Paula, you are the co-author of Your Middle Years. It's a guide on how you can look, feel, and be your best through your menopause years and beyond. Is discussing this still a taboo subject, or is it something we speak about freely, sort of, you know, cross-gender, within genders, that type of thing?
Yeah, well, I think certainly there is a lot more discussion around it now. And even since we wrote the book, it was launched last year in March 2016. There have been another two or three publications in the UK, books on the same subject and on the same topics. And I suppose there's a lot of discussion around the medical treatments for menopause, you know, and HRT. So that's always been there in the background with medical health professionals. But I think generally now women are getting a lot more open about it. And also I think there's a readiness to discuss, you know, the symptoms, because it's as natural as puberty, although, you know, it offers different changes to women. And in fact, it can occur at the same time as you have teenagers in the household. So there's a lot of hormonal issues around some houses, and it's not fully understood, you know. So I think talking about it helps us to realize, you know, we're not alone going through some of the symptoms, and they can be up to 40 symptoms of the menopause. And also maybe getting some help and sharing some tips as well.
There's not a one-size-fits-all, is there? Not everyone, but people will experience different ones of those 40 in different combinations, presumably.
That's right. I mean, there are close to three-quarters of women that will experience menopausal symptoms like hot flushes, night sweats, mood changes, sleep problems, and then difficulty concentrating. They can also have kind of short-term memory lapses, and that kind of leads to a loss of productivity. So when you're working, you know, you can see that kind of impacts in our life, our home and our work life. So I suppose it's important to realize that these symptoms are not permanent. They are temporary. For some people, they only last a few months. For others, they can come and go over a few years. But it is a transition, and you get through it. That's the good news. And you can go back to your former self quite well. But I suppose there are those challenges around weight as well that many people kind of identify.
Is there a benefit in preparedness? You know, this is coming down the road, and adjust certain things in your lifestyle, be it diet or what have you, that will sort of mitigate to some extent.
Yeah, that's right. And understanding the body, I mean, the menopause is really caused by a fall in the amount of the hormone estrogen, which is produced by the ovaries, and also progesterone. But it's a time of transition, so it's the end of the fertile years, and it's very individual experience for every woman. So no two menopauses are the same. But, you know, the absence or the decline of estrogen really leads to changes in the energy levels of many women. And
I'd imagine it's stressful too, because, you know, there are crossover symptoms with other things as well. And depending on your character, you know, it could be trying to pinpoint, is it this, is it that, could be quite a stress as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you're not sleeping and your energy levels are low, it's really hard to look after yourself to the same extent as you once did. And so things like health are kind of pushed to one side, because you're just trying to cope, really, get through, you know, the years. And very often the diet kind of falls by the wayside, and women see, you know, a spread around the middle. Now, you know, the visceral fat building up is not a good thing in many of us. And of course, that makes us more, you know, likely to eat emotionally. So it's sort of cyclical for some women, because they're hungrier, because their hormone disruption leads to a rising ghrelin, which is really, I suppose, a hormone that drives us to eat more during the day and be less satisfied. Leptin is we're a little bit resistant to leptin as we build up body fat, and that really keeps us satisfied. So we tend to nibble more, be less satisfied with what we're eating, nibble more again, and increase the girth of the waistline. And that leads to other problems then associated with heart disease, because one in two of us are more likely to have a high blood pressure after the menopause. We're more likely to have cholesterol problems, and we are more likely to die of coronary heart disease. That's the biggest killer after menopause. The bones as well are affected. So we also see, because estrogen helps to keep the calcium in the bone, we also see an increased risk of bone disease like osteoporosis. So I suppose the book, really, we decided we wanted, you know, forgetting about the hormone replacement therapy, because that's not going to be suitable for every woman.
Yeah.
And a lot of women won't want to take that. We really wanted to write a practical book on lifestyle, like what we can do ourselves to get through the years and to also offer a lot of hope to women, because it can be seen as very, you know, medicalized and very kind of very much sort of
a GP job. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, oh, well, off to the GP. Let me ask you a question too. A lot of times something comes along, be it menopause, be it whatever, and we react, you know, and we're surprised by it. We're going in with our eyes closed and we don't know what to expect. And then we start researching, then we start finding out info, then we start taking action. This book, I'd imagine, you know, as you say, it's unavoidable. It would be good to get your hands on in advance so you have that preparedness and you know what to expect and what to look out for.
That's a really good point, Greg, because I was exactly the person you described there. You know, I found myself in it going, I wonder, is this the menopause? I was about 48, 49. I was thinking, no, I surely that's another few years away, yes. But I started researching and realizing, yes, that I actually was, you know, in the menopause and going through it. And it was a little bit too late for me in some aspects of my life. You know, I'd had a very few uncomfortable years, which I probably could have helped myself a little bit better had I known what I do know now. So we would really love people to read this book in their early 40s, because the perimenopause really can last 6 to 7 years before you get the menopause. And during that time, you can experience symptoms. So I think it's a good idea for women to read this in their early 40s or mid-40s anyway.
There's lots of stuff in the book covering all aspects of it. And it's sometimes what you can do to yourself just to make yourself feel better, not necessarily directly address the symptoms, but how you feel better about yourself.
Absolutely.
How important is that? Because, I mean, the mental side of us, the emotional side of us, I mean, it's a huge percentage as to the whole, I think.
Absolutely. Without a shadow of a doubt, it really determines our health. So we can't separate the mind and body. You know, the mind has a profound effect on our health and our attitude to health. So looking after that with, you know, very simple techniques like taking time to yourself if possible. There is a huge growth in meditation now and mindfulness. Those type of simple breathing exercises without even having to go to a meditation class can help. Exercise is hugely important, really. And we understand not only for the bones and the waistline, but for the mind.
You mentioned the bones there. There's a caller onto us here who's in her early 50s, and she's inquiring, should she be taking something for the bones? But you're saying as well, you can talk to that if you wish, but the exercise would be a crucial part of that as well.
Yes, weight-bearing exercise, very important for bone health. So walking, you know, is not just mentally good, but I think there are 50 different benefits of exercise, many of which would bore your listeners. But, you know, the mental aspect is huge. And then for the bones, obviously vitamin D is critical, because many of us are covering up in the summer. We don't let the skin burn, so we need to take that.
And it can take some time for that to kick in as well, so it's no harm to be doing that in advance, I'd imagine.
No. So you take a supplement if you don't eat oily fish, but oily fish like mackerel, tuna, and salmon would be the best source of vitamin D and omega-3, or a supplement, a D3 supplement. And then obviously your calcium in dairy is critical. 3 servings, a small, you know, little bit of milk in the morning with your porridge would be beneficial for your cholesterol as well. And then a little bit of yogurt or cheese throughout the day. But the thing is, you know, I suppose that after the age of 50, we really have to be, I suppose, focused on bone health.
And you know, we're living longer, thankfully, and 50 now is nothing. So, you know what I mean? So we need to be
40.
Yeah, exactly, or even 35. But so we need to be making sure that we're planning for the next 40 years, realistically. So, you know.
Yeah, there's no point living to be 100 if you're not going to enjoy life. You know, and this is all about taking small steps, practical steps, or even having the knowledge and then making your own decisions about what you want to do and maybe what help you can bring in to support you.
A couple of questions, if you don't mind. Does a woman, this caller wants to know, need to go to the doctor if they think they're starting or going through the menopause, or do they just carry on and get to a sort of a point where they know it's time to go to the GP?
Yeah, you don't really need to go to the GP at all unless you feel the symptoms are unbearable. If your symptoms are really affecting your quality of life, absolutely go to your GP and get some help, because those may be the people that should look at hormone replacement therapy if their symptoms are really unbearable. But for the majority of us who think, look, you know, this is really inconvenient, I'm not getting enough sleep, I'm getting all these night sweats and flushes, and, you know, but they're things you can deal with yourself. You don't really need to have your GP say to you, you're in the middle of the menopause, you know. They don't really test hormones in this country, really, because it's just proving what we know, that at this time we lose our estrogen and progesterone, and the consequence of that are these symptoms that we see.
You mentioned sweats there. A caller has an issue and wants to know, is there anything you can take to stop them, or is there any remedy for them, or...
Well, there are a lot of things, I suppose, around sleep hygiene that you can do, but also, and that they would be everything from looking at, you know, what your sheets are made of, you know, so more natural fibers and cotton, and having light layers of clothing so you can peel them off one at a time, because very often, you know, having a heavy duvet, it's either on or off, but, you know, it's not going to help your sleep if you're getting up every few minutes to remove or to find it. So the thing around sleep, I suppose there's a lot on sleep hygiene in the book, but also I think things like soya beans and legumes are often used in many countries, particularly in Asia. We have a lot of epidemiological research to suggest that they are hugely helpful in preventing night sweats and flushes in Asian women. But they have been taking these types of legumes right throughout their lives, so they see a natural benefit.
Okay.
If we, on the other hand, just start taking lots of legumes in and around the time of the menopause, it may not help some people.
Exactly, because it might be a factor in a specific diet, and you take it out of that environment and start, you know, lumping it on yourself. Who's to say that it is going to have the same impact, same benefits?
Yeah, well, whatever the, we do see a benefit in some women.
Right.
But whatever the benefit in terms of hot flushes, I would still advise women to include a lot of these plant legumes, because they're huge sources of fiber in our diets, and 8 out of 10 of us are not getting enough. They're also really good in terms of their protein content and their vitamin and minerals in general. So they do provide a kind of a weak phytoestrogen. It's not as strong as our estrogen, but it does still bind to the receptors in our bodies, and it can alleviate some symptoms like hot flushes in some women. Worth a try.
Sorry about that. Osteoporosis, a woman in her mid-50s, not overweight, does this still happen? Is osteoporosis exacerbated by the menopause?
Yes, it is, yeah.
And that's still a thing?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So it's exacerbated by the menopause. So when the estrogen levels fall, calcium comes out of the cell at a faster, out of the bone at a faster rate. And we see the greatest loss of bone in the first 5 years after the menopause.
Mm.
So it is a good time, maybe, if there's a family history, to look at a DEXA scan for your bones, just to see how quickly you're losing the bone from the tissue. And that would be maybe having two DEXA scans over a period of time. But your doctor can advise you on that.
Now, we can only scratch the surface of the book. It's a comprehensive piece of work that you and Kate O'Brien have come up with, and allows people to have control of the situation, perhaps, rather than allow it control them. Very briefly, if you don't mind, too, you're also about to, or have released, a new book, Gut Feeling. Tell us a bit about that.
Okay, well, Gut Feeling is, it's fascinating. I suppose I'm just in awe of the research that's surrounding us at the moment about the gut microbiome. So in other words, the bacteria in the gut and how they influence our health. And one of the ways, I suppose, that the gut microbiome is important is that they really protect, these little bacteria protect us from pathogens entering the body, but they also boost our immune system. And we also find that in terms of disease like ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease and even IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, there seems to be a change in the microbiome or what's growing in the gut. So the book really is aimed at people who have symptoms of irritable bowel syndrome. So changes in bowel habits, people might swing from diarrhea to constipation, they may be very distended, abdominal pain, cramping, that type of thing. And these symptoms sometimes, again, because they can be milder, they can come and go. Sometimes people don't really go for help, and they may not have a diagnosis of irritable bowel syndrome, but nevertheless, their quality of life is affected. And so the book is written with a view to helping people to stay on the first stage of a low FODMAP diet, which is a diet for, it's an evidence-based diet now for IBS sufferers. Okay. And 70% of people with irritable bowel syndrome will show huge improvement in their symptoms by following the low FODMAP diet.
Okay.
And the book really has 100 recipes, and it's designed to help people to do without some of the products like onion flavored, mayonnaise or garlic.
Yeah, it's slightly more palatable, like, especially if you're socializing.
All the condiments.
Paula, where can people get more info on, firstly, your middle years and your new book as well? Search you out online, is it? So Amazon?
Amazon, yes, you'd find them on Amazon. Lovely. Or in Gill Books, but they should be available in Easons or all good bookstores.
And some of them, some of the Midland ones might have them as well. Paula, thanks so much.
Exactly.